Swiss Cybersecurity Days Talk. Powered by Handelszeitung.
Welcome to this episode of the Swiss Cybersecurity Days Talk, recorded live here in Bern. My name is Sandra Casalini, and today I'm joined by Jean-Marc Rickli, Head of Global and Emerging Risks at the Geneva Center for Security Policy. In this episode, we will talk about the positive and negative aspects of emerging technologies and technology as a weapon in politics. Welcome to our podcast lounge, Jean-Marc Rickli. It is a pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you for the invitation. Pleasure.
The title of your keynote speech is Emerging Technologies, Blessing or Curse. What is your answer to that question?
Well, there is no simple answer to this. So it's a genus phase of technology. So technology can be used for really good purposes. And in the presentation, I highlighted two Nobel Prizes that were awarded in 2020 to a technology that was responsible for manipulation of DNA. It's called CRISPR-Cas9. And the technology was invented in 2011, got the Nobel Prize of Chemistry in 2020. CRISPR was notably used during COVID to come up with a vaccine. And if you look at how fast the international community came up with a vaccine, this is partially thanks to CRISPR, but also AI. Last year, the Nobel Prize of Chemistry was awarded to Denis Hassabis from DeepMind for the discovery of an algorithm called AlphaFold that is doing protein folding, which is a very complex task. But protein folding is very important in drug discovery. And AlphaFold was developed in 2020. They got the Nobel Prize in 2024. So only 4 years between the discovery and the award of the prize. So here you can see how this technology can have tremendous positive impact on humanity. But at the same time, this technology can be used also for nefarious purposes. Because with CRISPR, you are able to manipulate the DNA of a human body, for instance, and change the genetics of someone, manipulate the genetics of human genome. That has already been done in 2018 by a rogue Chinese scientist that manipulated human embryo, make them resistant to HIV because he neutralized the gene responsible for HIV. But out of this manipulation, two twin sisters were born. The issue here is that we have no clue what other function these genes plays in the human body and what will happen when these two sisters will have babies and kids, how the genetic heritage will be actually transferred to the next generation. Likewise, with generative AI, has some huge impact in terms of productivity in companies. Bain Companies in a report mentioned that it's at least 20% gains of productivity, but this technology is also responsible for deepfakes. So the ability to anyone now to generate content, written, audio, video, that is fake and looks highly realistic.
Absolutely. So if we speak especially of cybersecurity, the World Economic Forum's Global Cybersecurity Outlook of 2024 revealed that almost 56% of leaders believe that emerging technologies will hand an advantage to cyber attackers. Not even 10% think it can be an advantage to defenders. Are they right?
Well, if you look at your antivirus is as good as the latest virus that has been identified, all right? But there are a lot of vulnerabilities that we call zero-day vulnerabilities that are, if you want, vulnerabilities that have not yet been exploited or identified, but could actually be already working. And so these zero-day vulnerabilities are being used, and you're completely unaware of it. So when you think about technology, you shouldn't think in absolute terms. Meaning, if you remember at the beginning of deepfakes, you would see pictures of people with several fingers. You know, and the reason why people had, you know, seven or eight fingers was that the algorithm that were trained used pictures that they found on the web, and very often people hold hands in pictures. And suddenly, you don't have five fingers, but tens, all right? So people would say, okay, well, you know, if you want to identify a deepfake, what you do, you look at the hands. But then, obviously, you can fix that problem. It's just algorithmic modification. And so when you think about this issue, you have to think about at any one point in time, who has the upper hand between the offensive and the defensive? And it looks like that in that field, the offensive is always ahead, even by a margin. But that is enough if you want to have tremendous impact. So that is the first thing. The second issue is that because these technology increasingly cooperate with each other, the risk surface and the vulnerability increases by the day. And it's impossible to find ways to counter with one system all these vulnerabilities. So unfortunately, yes, the future doesn't look really optimistic because we are building capabilities that in a way fix previous problems, but generate new problems that requires new technology to fix this problem that will actually create new security issues. And the issue here is that the growth pattern of this technology is exponential, meaning that we are used to think in linear term, but when it's exponential, I mean, the pace of change is so rapid that in a way it is impossible for us to think about that, think in an exponential way. Take deepfake, for instance. Deepfake, the technology behind that, GANs, Generative Adversarial Network, were scientifically developed in 2014. By 2022 in Ukraine, you had the first military use of deepfake. Now, if you were a military analyst, ask how this information would be conducted in 10 years from your time in 2013, you would have to come up with a technology that did not exist at the time, understand how it works and how it can be weaponized. Less than 10 years later, you see it on the battlefield. So this is the issue that we have to face as well, is how to think about possible future. And sometimes you have to completely question your current assumption because the future might be very different.
So in this game you are describing, let's call it a game of action and reaction, do you think there is a limit somewhere?
Well, the limits in that field for now, the biggest limit is energy. Okay, because as you see, these systems are consuming a lot of energy, especially LLMs. You know, the plan from the that was heralded by Trump at the first week of his presidency, you know, to come up with $100 billion to build up servers and energy infrastructure, is recognition of this trend. And then a week later, you had DeepSeek that allegedly, for a fraction of the cost of ChatGPT, reached 90% of performance of ChatGPT. So here, what you see is, yes, there are maybe ways to go over this high energy consumption of brute force. What these LMs are, or US companies are doing, are brute force. So you can basically tweak the system, optimize mathematical equation and probability to get to a new result. Nonetheless, it's very intensive in terms of energy consumption. But we are working on that. Now, companies, DeepMind, that I was referring earlier, Azabis basically said that they are working on fusion. You know, fusion is the ability to bring atoms together. So nuclear plants works on fission. So you divide atoms and you release lots of energy, but you also release nuclear waste. With fusion, you combine them, you fuse them together. The advantage is that it doesn't create nuclear waste, and it's an endless, unlimited source of energy. We are not yet there. DeepMind is working on that. If we get there, we might actually solve the issue of energy consumption, because we will probably end up with a situation where energy will no longer be an issue. But then you have other problems. Think about a world where there is abundant source of energy. Well, an entire socioeconomic system is based on pricing based on rarity. If anything becomes available, you completely destroy our socioeconomic system. You know, that creates new issues that you might think about.
Interesting, very interesting. Let's for a quick second talk about your politics. Thomas Suessli, chief of the Swiss Armed Forces, who was here before, he speaks of the return to power politics. The power of law gives way to the law of power. Technology is one of the weapons that drives these power politics. Is there a way to control this?
Well, he's very right. So I think we just leave a parenthesis of 30 years, you know, that I call happy globalization, where multilateralism was, if you want, the ordering principle of the international system. It was about cooperation. It was about lean manufacturing, decentralized production. And COVID showed that, you know, this system, if there is structural problem, this could lead to massive breakdown. And we've seen that with pharmaceutical compounds, access to pharmaceutical compounds, where most of them are produced in India or China. If these countries suddenly say, hey, we no longer export them, we are in a very troubling situation. Ukraine has demonstrated indeed that power politics is back, and we are witnessing that these days. And now you have the question, what is the first indicator of international power in the 21st century? And my answer to that is that it is science and technology. Because technology and emerging technology provide so much power in the actors that are controlling them. This is why you have such a fierce competition to develop artificial general intelligence. So you have fierce competition between companies. Now think about 30 years earlier when internet was created. People thought about the internet as an emancipation technology, that anyone would have access to information, that anyone would be able to interact. Where are we 30 years later? It's one of the most oligopolistic economic system with a concentration of power that is almost unseen in human history. It's a principle where the first one, or maybe the second one, if you take social media, you know, Facebook was the second social media website that was successful and built on the problem of its predecessors. But once it got the market, it got the entire market also. So there is a fierce competition between companies, and increasingly, because these technologies are so powerful, you have a competition between states, especially between China and the United States. And the United States, there are many, many differences between Democrats and Republicans, but the only topic on which they agree was to be really hawkish towards China. And now the U.S. has adopted, I mean, for the U.S., their main rival is China. And they have adopted legislation, regulation, to promote technological decoupling. So U.S. companies can no longer export some of the technology or devices to China. And the Americans are also putting pressure on their allies to do the same by basically threatening companies that are not U.S. of huge sanctions if they end up cooperating with China. So what we see here, we see a increasingly polarized international environment where technology plays the key role in terms of indicator of global power. And therefore, it means that those companies working in the field, as well as the institution that they're developing knowledge, scientific knowledge, university, but increasingly also private companies, are becoming, if you want, the key actors that are responsible for developing or providing states with global power and global reach.
Speaking of technology becoming a key to power, you are the co-author of a book about surrogate warfare. And even that term suggests sort of that we as humans are becoming immune to humanity.
Well, I mean, surrogate warfare came out of, at the time we wrote this book with my co-author, Andreas Krieg. We were both professor at King's College London, but we were based in the Middle East, in Qatar, and we were monitoring very closely what the Islamic State was doing. And out of our observation came this idea that we had to write a book that is based on the idea what people call in the past proxy warfare. But we didn't call it proxy because proxy warfare was very much tainted by the Cold War. You know, if you think about the Vietnam War or Angola, you know, that was proxy war where either the US or, well, the US and Soviet Union were using proxies on the ground to fight on their behalf. So we wanted to go beyond that because what we've seen is that a surrogate increasingly are being used by states and non-state actors. You know, a terrorist organization can use another non-state organization to fight on its behalf. So that was the first observation that we had to broaden the scope. The second one, which is completely overlooked by the concept of proxy warfare, and that's why also we call it surrogate warfare, is that because of the growing autonomy of technology, and in my presentation I talked about agentic AI, you know, so basically with ChatGPT, you interact with LLM, you ask a question, ChatGPT or any other LLMs will provide you with an answer, and then you can basically refine. You know, you ask, basically it's a conversation that you have with your LLM. Agentic AI are agents that are able to understand what you want, devise a strategy to get where you want to go, because it has access to different gateways, APIs, to different software. And so here what we start to see emerging are autonomous agents. So increasingly, and this is what people do not understand or have a problem to understand, is that increasingly technology becomes an actor in itself that is autonomous. And that leads to huge issues in terms of accountability, in terms of control, in terms of responsibility. And these open up new areas for thinking about the issue of ethics, the issue of regulation, because what most people overlook when they think about AI is that they have this idea of automation. It's nothing new. So you have machines that are developed to do a specific task. But here it's completely different because we are talking about agents that are able to learn and adapt to their environment. So basically the input that you give is not, the output is not planned. The machine is learning. And that leaves agency to the machine. So here, when you start thinking about that, you have to ask tough questions in terms of what it means to be human, what it who is accountable. And these are questions that are not far from being technical. Some of them, especially when you use that kind of devices to decide about whether a person will die or not, you know, weaponization of this technology, this leads to deep ethical questions.
So, talking about cybersecurity, technology, what do you think will be the most important one we will be dealing with in the future?
Well, I think we shouldn't say what is the most important one. I mean, you have, in a way, a set of technology that are transformative. Of course, you have AI. AI, if you want, is an enabler at a lot of different technologies. But we see also massive improvement in neurotechnology, in life sciences, synthetic biology, in energy technology. And so what will be increasingly difficult is to grasp what are the consequences of this transformation, because we call that the combinatorial impact. So when you start combining AI with synthetic biology, then your level of complexity becomes really, really high. As a matter of fact, at my institution, the Geneva Center for Security Policy, we are launching a new course in May on exactly that topic. How to think about the combinatorial implications of emerging technology. And this is something that is very, very difficult to grasp because you have to think about network, you have to think about a pace of transformation that is unseen, and you have to be able to question assumptions that are strongly ingrained in our in the way we think about the world, because suddenly you play with very different games. For instance, if you take crisis escalation. You know, there is a famous case study of the Cuban Missile Crisis, you know, when the Soviet Union deployed nuclear missiles on Cuba in 62, and then you had this crisis. And then little books that were written about the relationship between Kennedy and Khrushchev at the time, and, you know, it was a kind of game of poker. But it plays over several days. Now, what will happen, and my institution has launched last year a diplomatic dialogue with the five permanent members of the Security Council, which are also the five official nuclear power, about the use of AI in nuclear command control and communication system. So it's not the use of AI in missiles, if you have nuclear missiles, but the use of AI into the environment that is monitoring a situation, that is providing information, right? And so what we see, by using AI, you speed up the pace at which you get information and also at which you have to decide. Now, if you think about autonomous agents. Now, if we give more and more power to autonomous agents in the military and in weapons, it might be that we will end in a situation where autonomous agents are interacting with each other and they can basically lead to a crisis escalation. But the dynamics of crisis escalation between autonomous agents might be very and are very different than when humans interact. And we have very few examples of this. We have one industry where we can look at is the trading industry. And in the trading industry, it was one of the first industry to integrate algorithm. And suddenly we have witnessed flash crashes. You know, suddenly you have a flash crash. It goes down very quickly, but recover also very quickly. And here it's an outcome of two algorithms actually entering into a crisis. So this is very different, you know. So obviously, using algorithm in trading, you have a flash crash, leads to wiping out billions of dollars, which is unfortunate, but it's okay. You can recover from that. Now think about similar algorithm that would have impact on nuclear weapons or biological or chemical weapons. That would be a very different story, you know. So that's why we need now to think about how the combination of this technology will have both a positive impact, because there are huge possibilities for providing tremendous improvement in the way humanity lives, but also it has potential to have a tremendous impact.
So to end this on a positive note,
yes.
What do you think will be the most positive outcome of emerging technologies in, say, the next couple of years?
Well, there are lots of domains where we could see positive implication in terms of longevity. These tools are being used, as I mentioned earlier, to improve drugs, to detect cancer, to cure cancer. You know, it used to be the one. It is still the case for chemotherapy. It's the equivalent of a nuclear bomb. You basically release a substance in your body that basically wipes out the cancerous cells, but also the good cells. Now, if we are able to develop ways to actually only target cancerous cells and prevent their multiplication, then it's going to be a tremendous impact on patients and increasing life expectancy. Again, we are able to gain massive productivity by using these tools. So there are lots of ways these tools could be harnessed for good. The question is humanity ready to embrace only the positive application and try to safeguard us against the negative uses? And the answer to that is, I'm sorry to say, rather pessimistic, because the issue is becoming so complex and diffuses so quickly that no government has the complete oversight about what is going on. So to fix that problem, that's why companies and the scientific community should also develop technologies where security by design is embedded. You know, developing security where security, technology where security is the first principle. It's not just about making money, but it's about guaranteeing that if this technology suddenly goes in an unexpected way, there are ways to neutralize them. You know, because on some of this technology, there might be a way or point where if there is specific development, it will no longer possible to return to the situation that was prior to the crisis, what we call the situation ex ante, because we'll have changed the development, let's say, in biology, for instance. You know, if you start engineering a pathogen that nature has never encountered, nature will have not developed any safeguards. So if that would be the case, hopefully it will never happen, but if that would be the case, that a pathogen like this would be developed, hopefully we'll be able also to develop the kill switch that will neutralize this this pathogen.
So that was sort of halfway the positive end I was asking for. Thank you very much.
On that note, the fact that your listener, if they were not aware of this thing, and now aware of this, awareness is the first step to action. And therefore, when you see any new technological development, ask yourself, you know, what is behind it? What are the functions that this technology performs that is competing with my own human functions? And also, what is behind that? What is the business model? Okay, if a technology is free, it means that, yeah, probably you're the product. Probably you're giving away something. Could be data. It could be other things, you know? So by being already aware, be more critical. And this is also how you can, in your own way, have an impact on the future and the future development of these technologies.
That is a very good point. Thank you, Jean-Marc Rickley, for these insights. Emerging technologies are, and probably always will be, both a blessing and a curse. And it's up to us how we deal with it. And of course, a big thank you to our audience for tuning in. And if you enjoyed this discussion, don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time.